you for tuning into episode 109 of The Virtual Couch, a special bonus episode. I'm your host, Tony Overbay. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, certified mindful habit coach, writer, speaker, husband, father of four, ultra marathon runner, and creator of The Path Back, an online pornography addiction recovery program that is helping people reclaim their lives from pornography addiction or any type of compulsive sexual behavior. If you or anyone that you know is struggling, please point them to pathbackrecovery.com. There you can download a short ebook that describes five common mistakes that people make when trying to overcome pornography addiction. And I'll tell you, one of the questions I get asked the most is this program appropriate for teens? And absolutely it is. It is a faith-based program that just is all, it's strength-based. It kind of identifies the habit cycle, talks about ways to kind of increase your emotional baseline, improve your life, and put these destructive habits behind you. To be completely honest, the same principles that are kind of behind the Path Back Recovery program can really work with any kind of habit that you struggle with, whether it's compulsive eating, whether it's gambling, whether it's, I mean, all kinds of things. It's, I mean, and again, I'm the guy who created it, so I'm pretty big on it, but it can help in a variety of ways. And down to, I think, the last probably week, the end of February, using coupon code Happy New Year, all one word, we'll give you $50 off the cost of the Path Back Recovery program. And please take a quick moment, follow me on Instagram at Virtual Couch, all one word, or Facebook, Tony Overbay, licensed marriage and family therapist. Go to TonyOverbay.com and sign up there to get more info on upcoming exciting news, episodes, books, seminars, all kinds of things. So I want to get to today's episode. This was one that I was just really excited to. A while ago, several months now, actually many, many months ago, there was a post from a friend of mine named Nikki Harmon, and it was talking about being happy in the hard. And so I wanted her on just to talk about the post, and that was one of my favorite episodes. So I had a similar feeling or reaction when I came across a post by a writer named Brooke Romney. And the post was called Repeat After Me, My Child Is Not Perfect and Neither Is Yours. And so I loved everything about this post. So I reached out to Brooke and asked her if she would be willing to come on the Virtual Couch. And she was very kind and freed up some time. And so we get on and talk about her post. And you can find out more about Brooke at brookeromney.com. That's BROOKERONNEY.com. And just from her about, she says, I'm a blogger, speaker, freelance writer who resides just outside of Salt Lake City. Husband and I are raising four active boys who consistently remind us that we're not nearly as cool as we thought we would be. Man, am I feeling that the older my kids get. She says, I love to write about anything and everything, but she loves to write about things that matter. She does a lot of writing about parenting. And if you go find her online, brookeromney.com, you can see that she does some TV appearances as well in the Salt Lake area, talking a lot about parenting. And so I really just liked her work. But we are going to break down her article. Again, it's called Repeat After Me, My Child Is Not Perfect and Neither Is Yours. So without any further ado, let me get to this special bonus episode, my interview. And it's talking a lot about parenting. And it is with Brooke Romney. So on to the interview with Brooke. That this article that I just think is amazing is something that you actually wrote a little while ago.
I did. I wrote it a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, during kind of a difficult mothering moment. And it was a time where I had to decide if I really believed all of the things that I said I believed when it came to my own motherhood. So it's easy to be really nice and tell other people they're doing a great job when things are failing all around them. But it's quite another thing to decide that for yourself.
Okay, I love that. And maybe we'll get into this as we kind of go through this, but I like that point where, because as you're telling someone else, I mean, I feel like for the most part, we're pretty genuine when we really want to build somebody up and tell them they're going to be okay. But do we feel that internally if somebody's saying that back to us?
I mean, do you ever? If we're saying it to ourselves, you know, are we willing to have those same conversations with ourselves that we would have with someone else, you know, when they're kid does something that's really embarrassing and we tell them that it's okay and that people aren't judging them and that everyone loves them and they're rooting for them. Can we say that same thing to ourselves and believe it?
Right. You know, it's funny. When I was still kind of a shiny new therapist, I would say at times I would almost feel bad when I would come up with the, hey, what would you tell somebody that's in your situation question in a session? But I mean, but I still feel like to this day that sometimes is the best question to ask is what would you tell somebody, it was going through what you were going through.
Yeah, because it really is genuine, but it's really hard to take ourselves out of kind of that deep hole when we're in the moment.
Yeah. All right. So I feel, all right, Brooke, this could be very awkward or it could be just amazing. When I contacted Brooke, I asked her if I could maybe read a little bit of this article that she wrote. And then I just want her to comment on just kind of where you were at or what comes to mind, anything, stories, train of thought, anything like
Sounds
that.
Great.
That's okay. Although I still feel like, I mean, should you be reading it? I think maybe so. But then I felt like it would be annoying if I stopped you. But are you okay if I stop you and ask you?
Yeah.
Me? Okay. All right. All right. Now I feel pressure to read well. All right. Here we go. Okay. So Brooke's article is "Repeat After Me: My Child Is Not Perfect and Neither Is Yours." Right away from the title. Tell me where that comes from.
Well, believe it or not, my children are not perfect. But this was something that was really hard for me to deal with. And I don't know if everyone's like this or if maybe people have better perspective than I do. But I honestly felt like if I worked hard enough as a mother, if I read enough, if I learned enough, if I spent all of my time trying to help them learn and grow, that I would have really great kids who didn't disappoint me. I really thought that was a possibility. And I think I knew it wasn't. But, you know, it's like the person that says, oh, this professor's so hard. You could never get an A. And you're like, oh, yeah, I can. I can do that. I could get an A here, you know? So I kind of went at it with that attitude, even though I'm not sure that I realized that in the moment. But I thought that it was a possibility. And then as my kids got older, so I wrote this when my oldest was in middle school. And he is a really communicative person. And there were so many people that had no idea what their kids, you know, were doing or saying or acting like, but they felt the need to pass judgment or to act like nothing was wrong in their world. And so that's kind of where the title came from.
Okay. And what I love, and so here's where I'll jump in and start reading, is you say, oh yeah, my plan was to have perfect children. And you say, no, it's not realistic, but that never stopped me from reaching for the ideal. In fact, I was certain that if I mothered hard enough, and I love that phrase, if I mothered hard enough, and now putting that into context, that does make sense. If I work hard enough in class or that I can get the A, right? And you say, having kids who are always respectful, who cringe about an A minus, who are consistently kind, who do their hair and clean their room, who are a delight to be around, who give 100% at all times, who don't like sugar, who take spirituality seriously, who compose their own music, all-star athletes, and in their spare time, start nonprofits and code on the side for Microsoft. So, I mean, those are very ambitious goals.
They are. But I'm a reader, and so I've read stories about people like that. And what I think has happened in our social media culture is that we unconsciously take the triumph of one person's child and then the triumph of someone else's child, you know, and we put all of those into one perfect child. Now, I don't remember that it was Mary's son that got straight A's, and then it was Kyle's son who got a football scholarship. For some reason, they all just blended together in my mind that everyone's kids were just like killing it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, because Kyle's son never would get off the couch on the weekends. I mean, you know, we don't see that part.
We don't know. You know, even my friend, who has a straight A student and she's phenomenal to everyone else.
Yeah.
But she struggles with like crippling anxiety. And it is such a challenge for her family, but no one would ever see that. People only see the 4-0, super respectful, nice to everyone. You know, they don't see the therapy appointments and the medication figuring out and that please call a friend. You can get out there today. Please call a friend, you know? And so as I've gotten older and as I've gotten to know so many people in so many different situations, it's become really apparent that everyone's kid struggles with something, and some truly are significantly easier and more delightful than others at certain stages, but that's okay. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. I have to tell you what's really funny is right now I had to shut down something on my computer because I'm getting a lot of text responses. My son played a high school basketball playoff game last night, and my son had a great game, and I posted a video on it. And so, I'm getting these, oh, he makes it look so easy. And now that we're talking, I want to say, yeah, but boy, you should see his room, you know, or you know, we have to push him a little bit in class, and you're right. I mean, when we put out these just really, inspiring or exciting messages on social media, how does somebody not just assume, oh, they got it easy? I mean, you know, this guy's perfect, right?
And we all do it. And for some reason, even when we know better, we still do it.
Yeah, yeah. So I like you say, repeat this phrase often. My child is not perfect. Your child is not perfect. And that's the way it's supposed to be. How do you convince someone that that's the way it's supposed to be? It sounds like that maybe is part of the struggle.
Well, I think it comes through experience. I also think it comes from being realistic with your own children. It's really easy as a parent of young kids or as a parent of teens to ignore the bad. But I don't think that does our kids or others around us any services. I think it's so much healthier to say, okay, my child struggles with, you know, fill in the blank. Maybe he struggles with being kind. Mm-hmm. Maybe your child struggles with being motivated. Maybe your child is struggling with something a lot more serious, with pornography or with addiction or, you know, being somebody that you really don't want them to be. And, you know, being able to face that head on in a rational way and say, it is healthier for me to understand this because then I can help them become better. So I think it's a hard lesson. I feel like you really have to go through something. It's hard to tell a mom of a 2-year-old that maybe he's not going to grow up to be smart or motivated or athletic or whatever it is.
Well, because I feel like I hear, and kind of the theme then is that when I'm in a session, I will hear someone say, I might want to say that you're right, normalize it. And everybody has their own strengths and weaknesses and challenges. And they're going to say, but you don't know how hard I'm working. I mean, I think that's why I loved what you said about momming hard, you know, how hard I mom. Then the next paragraph, you talk about your son might throw a tantrum in the checkout line, regardless of your exact regurgitation of love and logic patterns. Because I will have people who, you know, I love to preach the nurtured heart approach, and people will say, hey, I'm doing it. And they still talk back to me. So now what? What's wrong? And it's like, well, you're still going to do that. But I really like this. You said your daughter may need extra help when reading, even if you read to her in your womb and practice every single night. I get a lot of clients that are new moms or they're expecting moms. And do you remember what that pressure was like on feeling like you did have to do everything right?
Well, because when your kids are little, it really does seem like you have so much control over the outcome. But what we forget is from the very beginning, they come with their own personalities, with their own strengths, with their own weaknesses, and that we can do absolutely everything. And even when they're young, they'll still be who they are. And so my oldest, he came out of the womb crying for 3 hours, and the nurses were like, what is going on with him? And I didn't know any different. Right. And when he was a little kid and a toddler, he just liked to push my buttons. I would, you know, back then, you know, I would do the love and logic approach, like, hey buddy, you know, you're not being very kind right now. So I'm going to have you go to your room for a little quiet time until you're ready to come out and be kind. And he would kick the door for 2 hours, and he would never turn into somebody kind.
Yeah.
And so I had to start being a little bit flexible. I had to start understanding, you know, my own mom intuition. And I stopped doing what everyone said was the best approach because it wasn't the best approach for him. And it wasn't that I wasn't trying. It was he had a lot of energy and emotion that he was trying to figure out. And so, you know, fast forward to my second son, who was pretty easy, but super whiny and difficult in another way, even though I was doing all of the, you know, quote unquote, right things. And then my third son, who just came like, life's good. I've got 2 ear infections and I'm going to smile at you all day long, you know? And so as I had more children, I realized that no matter what I do, they still are who they are. And I can mold and I can direct and I can teach. But at the end of every single day, they were who they are. And I'm just here to help direct. I can't turn my first one into my third child. And to be honest, there's amazing, amazing qualities that my first child has that my third does not have that will be fabulous in their adult life. Sometimes I say it's too bad we can't see what these qualities will do as adults, you know, when we're in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We probably would ease off a little bit with some of our expectations. Right. I like what you said. It wasn't the best approach for him. And I really, even when I am, you know, preaching a parenting technique, a nurtured heart approach, a love and logic. I often say that I just want couples or parents to have a framework mm-hmm. to work from, but then, you know, kind of there's a base to operate from, but that doesn't mean that you have to, you know, be rigid with that base or you're doing something wrong if you deviate from that. But I think it's a great idea to just have a place to start.
I think so too, 'cause I pulled tools from all different types of parenting strategies and styles. And I do think that, you know, the nurtured heart approach probably works for, you know, 95% of the kids that people are working with. And then there's those 5% where this part of the nurtured heart approach works. And this part of a little bit more stern approach Absolutely. Works, you know, and just figure out what works best yeah. for your kids.
Yeah, no, I like that. You put on here that your son might consistently leave friends out, even if you teach and model kindness at every turn. Your daughter might engage in dangerous behavior online, even if every tactic has been used to promote self-worth and encourage morality. Your son might drop out of college, even if you hold a doctorate and are passionate about education. And the article spoke to me so much because I feel like I can speak to each one of those examples literally, where, you know, people have raised a daughter just in righteousness, and they've protected and they've kept evil influences away, and they've blocked phones and filtered everything. And it's like, you know, how did this happen? And those kind of things. And, you know, I had a client once that the son wanted to go into show business, and literally parents were both very, very successful professionals. And, you know, they brought him to me so I could talk him out of it. But it's like, no, that's what he wants to do. So and they took that as that they had yeah. failed. So I love that, which speaks right to your next line. This does not mean you have failed. Kids are not programmable robots who take in commands and execute. They come with personalities, likes, dislikes, talents, and frailties, just like you and me. But your next line, I'm curious your thoughts here. We're led to believe our children are a reflection of us or a conglomeration of what we have taught and been an example of. And while that might be true at times, I think hundreds of instances where that hypothesis has been proved wrong. So talk about that. What comes to mind there?
We want to put so much pressure on ourselves. And so I think it's the good and the bad, right? We want to take credit mm-hmm. for, you know, your son is an awesome basketball player. Well, that's really fun for you. And it would be nice for you to be able to take credit for that. Like, I raised this basketball star, you know, who did this because taught yeah. hard work and I taught, you know, all of these things. But let's be honest, there's a million dads out there trying to teach the same thing to their upcoming basketball star. And only a couple kids yeah. are ever really basketball stars. And so, you know, and this same thing goes with all of those examples, right? So I teach kindness in my home. I write articles about kindness. I believe it to my core. And I have two of my four darling kids that it does not come easily to. It just doesn't, you know?
Okay.
And I've had to understand yeah. that I am teaching kindness. I believe in kindness. I act out of kindness. The fact that my two of my boys do not get it very easily is not a reflection on me. That does not mean that I am not kind. That does not mean that I don't value kindness. Right. It means that they are trying to figure out their place in the world, and they need some, you know, some life lessons. They need to be unkind and find out that that loses friends for them to realize, like, oh, maybe that's not working so well for me. And so while I continue to teach right. kindness at every turn and give examples and read stories about it and all of those things and punish also, you know, or discipline when they're unkind,
yeah,
they still struggle sometimes. And it gets better every year. But I think the minute that the teacher calls and tells us that our kid is, you know, being rude to someone in the classroom, we think, oh my gosh, like, I'm the worst parent ever. How in the world could I have a kid who's unkind, yeah. you know? And instead of allowing the ownership to be on our children for what they've taken in and then give them a little space to learn and grow, just like we had, I think, I don't know if this is true and you probably know better than I do, but I think our kids are under microscopes all of the time now. And when we were kids,
absolutely,
we had unsupervised play dates where we could be rude and we could have natural consequences of yeah. being rude. Now, you know, there's a watchful eye all of the time. And so when your kid is rude, just like you were probably when you were 7, you know, you get a call from the teacher. Well, no yeah. one ever called your mom because no one ever saw you being unkind. So I think it's difficult. I think it's a lot of pressure for parents because everyone sees or records or texts everything these days. So,
yeah. Well, and you know what I love when kind of going back up a little bit, you put on here talking about seeing the differences in siblings, similar genes and identical surroundings have, that there's just these endless combinations. But you said as a younger mom, you once complimented a friend on what an amazing job she was doing with her teenage son. And she wisely replied, "If I take credit for all the good, then I also have to take credit for the bad. So each day I just try to show up for them and love them and teach them the best way I know how. The rest is up to them." I love that concept because I do feel like there is a lot of, well, it couldn't have been my kid kind of a thing going on too.
Yeah, that I think that happens a lot. And like I said in the beginning, it's a much easier way to live our lives to just get defensive and say, no way. Like people are so, they're so dramatic now. It's not that big of a deal. Or there's no way that was my kid. Or it's the friends he's hanging out with. He was never like this before he was friends with, you know, John.
Exactly. Yeah.
We have to be able to say, honestly, like my kid might have fill in the blank, you know, cheated. My kid might have cheated. I have taught honesty and hard work and my kid might have cheated. It's not the teacher's fault. It's not someone else's fault. And then I think it's so much healthier to be able to deal with who our children are. And at the same time, show them how much you still love, accept, and hope for them. You know they're better than it. You know they're not a cheater. You know they're better than that. You know it was a moment of weakness. And let them grow into someone better because you still love them. But you're also going to be honest with them and say, dude, not okay. Like, what do we need to do? What do we need to do to fix this?
So, and I'm like, at what point do I jump onto my soapbox here, Brooke? Because there's something you keep going back to love. And I know this can sound so cliched, but man, I just feel so passionate about the concept of loving your kid over a rule or letting them know that. And I talk about this on anytime I get a chance on a podcast of that, you know, we want our parents to, or our parents as parents, we say, come to us with anything. And then if our kids come to us with the bad, and if we kind of get really upset or angry or lose our minds, then all of a sudden they now have to feel, they feel like they have to monitor the data that they provide, which now just kind of creates that. What are they going to hide? Because they really are worried about this conditional love, even though we're the ones sitting there saying, hey buddy, you can talk to me about anything. And I feel like that does take, I know it probably takes experience. It kind of takes being really intentional as a parent to kind of take a moment and pause, but to just always respond with love. But I like what you said. You're going to be frustrated. You're human, but you know that I really do feel like it's important to kind of set the table with, if you say that they can come to you with anything, that you really do have to have that stance and just be able to take a moment and just express that love, being grateful that they are coming to you that's why I love what you wrote and letting them know they're going to make mistakes and I'm not going to beat myself up. I think a lot of times parents withdraw or sulk or pout because they do feel like, man, what did I do here that my kid did this thing? And so now they're not responding with love and the kid feels bad. And now we've kind of just created a pretty negative situation.
I love what you said about love. And I think what has really helped me is, and this might be a bad attitude, but I've changed my perspective and I've gone in to especially like these teen years of parenting, understanding that my kids are going to make mistakes. My kids are going to disappoint me. And there are going to be moments as a parent that are going to be really hard, really difficult, where I'm going to cry myself to sleep about it. And that is what being a parent is. And anyone who says it's not, is not living in a reality. They're the type of parent that's going to brush things over. They're going to pretend like it's not happening. Their kids are not going to come to them for help or assistance when something goes bad. They're going to do everything they can to hide what they've done or the consequences of what they've done. And it's really sad to me because then they don't have someone on their side to walk them through what's actually hard. And what's hard is saying sorry, is getting back up, is deciding that you're not going to be that person anymore. And kids really need an ally and someone they can turn to when things do go badly. And I think it makes all the difference when they have that.
So, I'm so glad we get to this point too, because you're right. I mean, it's at some point, I like in your article, you even say that you're going to lose sleep and that we're, you know, it's going to be hard. And if we then say, all right, I'm going to double down on a rule, and I don't, and I know there are going to be people that are going to be listening that, that maybe think, okay, you're just letting your kid get away with everything, but I still have rules. There still are consequences, natural consequences, consequences oh, yeah. that they're aware of, that are clear, that they help come up with. But knowing that yeah, it's like I'm going to be sad that the consequence is there. I'm going to be disappointed that they maybe broke a rule. But I'm going to tell them how proud I am of them for coming to me with that information, and how, you know, I do want them to succeed. And I know that can just sound so, again, cliched, but you hit on something huge where if they really don't feel like they can come to you as a parent, and then they do kind of feel like they're going at things a little bit alone. And I can kind of go, I feel like I go really deep here with when they're going at it alone, or if they turn to their friend, maybe their friends who sometimes I will just refer to lovingly as the peanut gallery, who are going to say that, you know, they're not going to say, hey, maybe right. your mom's right. You know, they're going to say, yeah, you have to do that. And so at that point though, when they do kind of feel isolated, or, and this is where the work that I get to do in addiction, not to kind of get all dark, right? But addiction comes from isolation, and it comes from this void and feeling not connected to, whether it's their family or their faith or their, you know, their education or their, wherever they feel like there's that void, like they can't go to somebody. That's where they start to turn to coping mechanisms, or maybe people that are going to tell them the things that they want to hear. And so I love that you kind of went down that path.
No,
sorry
I love
to kind
it,
of take over
I,
with that.
You know, I do think that sometimes people, like maybe who are a little bit more old school, are like, well, you know, if my child cheats, like I'm going to punish him. And I actually like, yeah. I agree. There should be a consequence, and we have those in our house. And, you know, yeah, like you don't get to go out with, you know, maybe not for cheating, but you don't get to go out with friends, or maybe you get to stay after school with a tutor every day. If you're going to cheat in math, that means you don't understand it. So every day, instead of going and hanging out with your friends, you're going to have a math tutor. And not only that, but like, I'm going to have you help me out a little bit at home, because this was hard for me. And this took a lot of my time and energy and now my money to pay for a math tutor. So you're going to have some extra chores at home. You're going to babysit on Saturday night when your dad and I go out, because then I don't have to pay a babysitter. You know, because I think sometimes people say, well, that's so soft, or that's, they're never going to learn. And right, that's right. absolutely not true. The difference is that while they're learning, they feel loved, they feel accepted, and that they belong to me. And that because they cheated, I'm not looking at them like, oh, I have a liar in my family. I have a cheater in my family. I raised a liar. You know, that's not how I feel about them. Mm-hmm. You had a right. weak moment because you're not understanding something. How can I help you? How can I help you understand that?
Oh, and okay. And I want to, this is what I love too, when people will tell me, and I do hear this often, where people will say, well, you know, my parents were hard on me, yeah. you know, and I turned out okay. And I never, and this won't always work, but every now and again, I will, you know, I might just kind of very kindly or casually say, hey, what's your relationship like with your parents mm-hmm. now? You know, and so, I mean, like, it's like, well, I mean, we don't talk very often. Like, oh, okay, well, you know, I don't know. I guess then what's our goal? Is it to have a relationship with our kids as they grow older and be a part of their lives and get to throw your grandchildren around and that sort of thing. Yeah. So, and again, I'm probably being overly dramatic with that, but I do feel like I want them to know that they will be able to come to me with anything, and I'm not going to be, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that. Or there's not going to be any of those
kind
of responses.
Like, let's be honest, Tony, sometimes you are going to respond like that because maybe it's pretty bad. But what I've noticed is that if you have a loving, open relationship with your child, you can make mistakes too. You can have that bad reaction.
Yeah.
And then you can come back to them because you have that relationship, and you can say, like, man, I'm sorry. That was hard. That was hard for me to hear. And that was ugly and not something I ever hoped that you would do. And so that was hard for me, but I love you anyway. And let's work it out. Figure it out.
I'm laughing. I'm like, okay, where are the cameras in my home? Where, how did Brooke find out that, you know,
it's irrational to think that when your kid comes to you with something horrible, that you're going to be like, you know what, buddy? Like, that's too bad. No, like you, especially maybe dads, I don't know, but especially, you know, whoever's the stronger disciplinarian in the family, their reaction is probably going to be rough, but that's where the relationship up to that point can save that reaction, you know, can make it okay. Because that That's the what yeah. the first reaction isn't the end of the conversation. It's just the beginning, and you start working through things and helping each other and encouraging each other to be the person that you know they can be.
So, okay. So can I go like super deep therapist-y stuff here that I love you brought this up, because I do want to say, you are absolutely right. Cause I can think of two things in the last, couple of weeks where my reaction was not what I wanted it to be. And you are exactly right. Where I come back with it. Oh, okay. I totally yeah. reacted. I handled that wrong, and I'm more than happy to apologize. I really am. But I do feel like, I've been doing, you know, basically some sort of daily mindfulness practice for several years now, since yeah. I kind of learned more about it. Was in, you know, again, kind of a young therapist. And I do feel like you can intentionally work toward being able to take a little bit of a pause or a breath or that sort of thing. And the only reason I kind of throw the deep therapy stuff is I love this concept of acceptance and commitment therapy. And so, which would in this scenario say that because of all the stuff that you bring to the table and all your experiences as a kid and as a young parent and as being judged as a parent or whatever it is, that, you know, sure, some of us are going to react more than others, but we're all going to kind of probably get there at some point. And so, and there's that acceptance. But then if our goal is not to overreact, you know, then if that's the goal, it's like, man, I don't want to fuse to that story of, hey, well, you know, it's okay if I do. I mean, because it is okay, but I don't want to like absolutely. Use that as an excuse. That
my husband has a much shorter temper, and he's been working on it for a lot of years. Ever since we had kids,
okay.
And I've seen such incredible strides. And you know, we had something happen recently yeah. that deserved, like, it could have had a gigantic blow up reaction in our home. And what my husband did was he heard all the information. And then he walked away. He went to some meetings that night that he needed to be at. He didn't even say a word, which actually is a little scarier sometimes for a teenager. He didn't say a word.
Right, right. Yeah.
And then when he got back, he had a really calm, insightful, but still very, you know, strict conversation about what had just gone down. And I was so impressed. I am naturally, just luckily, just more calm and a little bit more loving and open and accepting. And so my husband has worked incredibly hard. And I have to say that as we've had teenagers, the change has been phenomenal in their relationship with him, as he's calmed his temper and been able to be really rational. He's still like a pretty strict disciplinarian. They know he means business, you know, consequences absolutely happen when they come down from him. But there is so much more love because he doesn't lose it, you know, like.
That's exactly. Yeah. No, that's perfect. So yeah, because it can yeah. be worked on. I love that. And then knowing that you're still going to react. And I love the fact that you said that I do find parents that don't mm-hmm. really say sorry very often. And I think that's a pretty powerful thing to be able to tell your kid that you blew it at times. And sorry is okay. Okay. I like there's a couple of things I still want to, I like this phrase you say, sometimes their parental goggles are a little too rosy. So get comfortable with reality, get to know your child, and do what's best to withhold judgment of other kids and parents and what must be being taught at home. Talk about that. I mean, the parental goggles being rosy, and then what must be being taught at home. My wife and I talk about this often.
That is my least favorite phrase ever, is when someone says, uh-huh. I wonder what they're teaching at their house. And I just want to scream right. yeah. when someone says that, because do you really think someone sitting down with their kids and saying, on the playground, I want you to push that kid hard if he tries to get a football front. You know, I don't right. think that anyone is hoping to raise kids that are mean or that cheat or that do horrible things online. Like that's not being taught at home, you know? And so that phrase.
Right. Yeah. Here's how you get around Snapchat, kids, right? You know,
here's
or whatever.
How you I don't think that's happening. One of your girlfriends and make sure she feels horrible for the entire ninth grade year. You know, no one.
Yeah, that's not the whiteboard.
So that
no.
phrase is really important to me, that we all take a little breath and understand that most people, and I know that not all people, but I do believe that most parents really want what's best for their children. They want them to grow up yes. to be kind and responsible and smart. They want them to be motivated. They want them to be inclusive. They really do want all of these things. So we have to assume that other people are teaching good things at home, and that when their child does something that hurts one of our children or that belittles one of our children, That was not something they learned at home. That's part of growing up. You know, that's them trying to find their way in the pecking order of life. And, you know, we can have a little breathing room. And in that story, there was a mom who I was sitting next to one day, and she was telling me all about her child and how amazing her child is, just responsible and kind and just inclusive and just awesome in every way. And I'm like, wow, like you have, like, you're really lucky. You know, that's one heck of a kid. And then literally the very next day, someone told me about how hard that person has been for their child and how they had been exclusive and mean and said just some horrible things. And in that moment, I really thought, that's all of us, isn't it? Every single one of us has had that experience where we think everything is awesome, that our kid would never do this or never do that, or that they're always this. And in reality, all of our kids, even the very best of them, make mistakes. They leave a friend out. They make life hard for someone for a minute. They are disrespectful to a teacher. You know, those things happen because it's part of growing up and it's part of life. So just really understanding that kid that you're talking about right now at home, that, oh my gosh, I can't believe him. He is so horrible. Someone else in another home could very well be saying the exact same things about your kid. Now, your kid might not have done anything that's so horrible, but maybe they left him out, or maybe they never call him anymore. Or maybe this kid is really struggling and that parent really, really wishes they had a good friend, and your kid is the one they wish would come and call, you know? And so just taking that step back and saying, I'm not going to talk about other people's kids like that anymore, because chances are they're just figuring it out, just like my kid is figuring it out right now, especially as teenagers.
Absolutely. Hey, Brooke, do you have the article in front of you right now? If you don't mind, because there's a couple of paragraphs at the end that I would love to be in your voice and not mine.
I'm happy to.
Okay, if you don't mind. Yeah. And I didn't even say at the, I guess I'll do this probably in the intro too, but so you have four boys, right? I'm always curious, was there a, hey, let's keep going till we have a girl? Was it we're good with, you know, we do boys well?
You know what?
I mean, I love those conversations.
I think I want four kids, and that's the way they came. And so we are enjoying a much rowdier house than I thought, but I love it. It's fantastic to be a boy mom. I think it's also fantastic to have a girl. So I try and spoil my nieces when I get the chance and watch them dance and buy them clothes so that someone appreciates things like that.
No, I love it. I love it. We had three girls, and so then I was ready to be a girl dad, and then we had the boy. It was kind of fun.
I do.
All right. Do you have it? Okay. So I would love, if you don't mind, maybe just starting at that. We're about maybe three paragraphs from the end where it says, and if you really have been fortunate enough.
And if you really have been fortunate enough to get one of those rare, perfect on the outside children, will you do me a favor and have this conversation with them tonight? You are an amazing kid. But we know you're not perfect. You have made mistakes, and you will continue to make more because you are mortal. You will do things you're not proud of. You will see something inappropriate and like it. You will fail a test and forget to turn something in. You will say words you know you shouldn't, laugh at a mean joke, and be a jerk when you should be kind. We already know this will happen, and we love you anyway. So please tell us when you're struggling and need help. We will still think you're phenomenal. The worst thing you can do is keep hard things hidden. They will eat you up inside. Open up and admit when you are wrong. Tell us when you're weak and how we can help you. There will be consequences, but you can get through them, and you will come out on the other side so much better and so much stronger. Please know that you can always be forgiven by us and by God. You have a million chances to make things right, and you can work through anything. We are always here for you. So while we appreciate your awesomeness, we would never expect you to be perfect.
I love that. And I love especially the part about the, please tell us when you're struggling and need help. Because I feel like, you know, if anything, our job is to create an environment where they do feel like they can come to us when they're struggling and need help. Do you remember what kind of was behind that when you wrote that paragraph or those paragraphs?
I have one child who really is kind of like as good as it gets, you know, and he is so driven to do the right thing and to do well at everything he tries. And it is a wonderful thing to be a parent to someone like that. But I was also that person growing up. And there can be a lot of unnecessary pressure that comes with that. And a lot of things that maybe people have to work through later. I also, having four boys in a generation with so much freedom online, I really wanted to create a home that allowed them to come to me and say like, hey, I saw pornography. I'm having a hard time. I saw a naked woman. That was interesting to me. So I need you to shut down, you know, the internet. I need you to be, you know, it's really, and I'm just gonna, it's really cool. I have one kid who said, Mom, when I'm on the computer, like I want to be in the same room as you, no matter what. And he does that because we have said, it's okay for you to tell us if you're struggling with something. It's okay for you not to be perfect. It's okay for you to see a picture of a hot college girl and want to look at her, you know? And he said, I don't want to be tempted by that kind of stuff. So I want to be in the same room as you if I have to do my work on the computer.
And that takes a lot of trust. I mean, that's what exactly what we're trying to set the stage for, right? As parents, is to have that kind of, so if they come to you with that, and I work with too many parents who are teenagers who the experience is not that, where it's a pretty negative reaction if they come to their parents.
Yeah, and I just feel like, you know, no matter what it is, whether it's grades, whether they feel like they have to cheat in order to get an A because they've always had a 4.0, you know, it's great to get good grades, but if you get an A- or if you get a B+ and you've worked hard, we're okay with that. You know, thanks for working hard. Thanks for doing your best. You know, I understand that. And it's different for each kid, right? Some kids need a little bit more motivation to do their best, while others, you need to take it down a little bit and let them know, like, we love you no matter what. If you take the ACT and you've been a brilliant kid your whole life and you don't do that well, I still think you're smart. I still think you're valuable. I still think you're incredible. I still think you're going to do great things. You're not a disappointment to me, you know, and you're not a disappointment to yourself. Like, there are a million things you can do with it, not 36 ACT score, you know? And so just letting our kids know from the very beginning that we're planning on them making some mistakes. We're planning on them figuring out how to make those right and that we can help them along the way. So.
Exactly. I love it. And then the last paragraph, you said that this will take a weight off their shoulders and perhaps start a conversation that needs to happen. And I feel like those conversations are the ones that lead to that experience you have with your son, where he says that he wants to sit there beside you. Letting go of unrealistic expectations for ourselves and our children brings about a healthy openness and allows everyone the freedom to become something more. And this closeness, this acceptance, this connection just might remind you that in reality, with all its ugliness and heartache, can somehow transform life into a really beautiful thing. Brooke, that is just, this is everything I hoped it would be. I mean, I really feel like this is a message that people need to hear and kind of hear often. You had mentioned that this is something, do you have people still comment on this?
So I mean, this even before you had brought it back. The article that hits people closest to home. And it did the same thing for me. You know, when I went through a difficult parenting moment not too long ago, I reread this article for myself and I said, do I really believe this? Do I really believe this? And I just want to tell you, Tony, that I believe everything I wrote here. And I think that as parents, if we can get comfortable with mistakes and then allowing our children to grow from them and letting ourselves grow. And there's another line in here that I wanted to just emphasize really quickly is parents are also human. We aren't going to do everything right. You know, sometimes we're like, we've done everything right. We've tried everything. But sometimes we really do make mistakes. Sometimes we really don't do everything right. And we have to backtrack.
Sure.
And we have to apologize. And we have to say, okay, guys, this isn't okay. This isn't right. And I'm sorry I didn't teach you better, but we're going to start now. And so that's also part of being human, is that we have to give ourselves a little room to grow and become in our own parenting, to become who we want to be. You know, maybe you've lashed out for 15 years. Maybe you haven't been open. Maybe you've closed your eyes for 15 years. It's not too late for you to become someone different and create a different feeling of love in your home.
Absolutely. That's the, don't fuse to that. It's too late story, right? Or I don't know what I'm doing story, because there's plenty of work that can be done and help you can get. So Brooke Romney, thank you so much for taking the time today. This was, I was really excited that you responded and were willing to come on. I mean, when I read this the first time, I was just really touched, and I just appreciate. I've been reading more on from your website, BrookRomney.com. Really, is that the easiest place for people to find you?
Brooke Romney, right? Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Okay. And I'd love to have you on again sometime to talk about a couple of the other things that you're pretty passionate about on your website as well.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Hey, Brooke, thanks so much for taking the time.
Okay,
I'm gonna hit stop, but hang on just a second. Thank you.
Compressed emotions flying past our heads and out the other end. The pressures of the daily grind.